Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
T. Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated Star Trek The Next Generation show. I'm Philip Gilfa, sitting in the center chair this week, and I'm joined by the flagship's expert on all things 22nd century, ship historian, Lieutenant Commander Darren Moser. Darren, what have you been studying from yesteryear lately?
Yesteryear? Oh, that's funny you should mention that, Philip, because I've heard these things called umbrellas. Apparently, before planets had, you know, planetary weather control, people didn't know when it was going to rain, and they had to, like, carry these when someone predicted what might happen with the weather, but it was, like, maybe a 40% accuracy rate. It's exciting stuff, I gotta tell you.
And I heard they also wore something called hats. Am I saying that correctly?
You know, it's a hot hats.
Oh.
You have to put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Well, I'm also joined by Chief Engineer Daniel Prue. Now, Daniel, I've heard Utopia Planitia is looking for some ideas about movable nacelles. Sounds crazy. Is that one of your concepts?
Listen, I spend a lot of time thinking about nacelles. And here's the thing. I came across this idea, movable nacelles. It feels a lot to me like the spoiler of a car. Ultimately useless, but visually interesting. So, hey, you know what? I'm going to say I'm on board for it. Let's see where it goes. Maybe something cool can come from it.
I'm just picturing your pitch, Daniel. You guys, okay, guys, just imagine. Stay with me here. Movable nacelles. Did I just blow your mind? I totally just blew your mind, didn't I?
See, I'm imagining him and Don drapering it with like a slideshow. All right. Well, as folks can't tell probably from that, we're going to do our second in a, I assume, seven-part series of Trek Switch. And this is a little concept we started several episodes ago about taking each series of Star Trek and then using an episode from, in this case, Season 2, and trying to either figure out which episode from Season 2 Next Generation that we think either would be a good fit for another series or a good rewrite for another series or a sequel or a prequel or whatever like that. And so since we recently discussed Season 2, we are going to do Season 2 again, and it's not just because we randomly put topics on a Excel spreadsheet. Okay, so
looking at that Excel spreadsheet, episode 124, Hyde and Trelane, was when we did Trek Switch Season 1. For those who want the complete
terrible
experience.
Title. It does not fit at all.
Yeah, you know, it's... Oh gosh, whoever writes those titles, I don't know. He was slipping back then.
You know what? Actually, I'm sorry to interrupt, and if I may suggest, we should... That's kind of a... And I think we kind of maybe suggested this before, maybe not, but we should totally, like, when we're fitting these episodes into these other series, come up with appropriate titles for those
Ooh.
Series. I think Philip made that joke last time, but I think that's a good idea.
So if it's a DS9, it's got to be all Latin-y and like eight
exactly,
words long.
Exactly.
We could do that.
For the winner goes the spoils. I don't care what the episode's going to be about. That's going to be the title. All right. So we're going to begin, of course, with Enterprise, because that comes first, like it always did. And I'll go first to kick us off here. So my first choice... is going to be Loud as a Whisper. And for those who don't remember, I guess we may have to quickly summarize the episodes we were picking from Season 2. Loud as a Whisper, this is where we have a actual deaf actor portraying a deaf ambassador who visits the Enterprise D to help negotiate some warring alien species. And he has this interesting chorus that surrounds him to help interpret him. They all end up getting killed, and he has the crisis of how to communicate, and eventually all goes well, and a very cute ending. So the reason I was thinking about this for Enterprise, even though, of course, it's, you know, in-universe the first, since it has been the most recent, I feel like they could do this better. That, you know, in the 21st century, you know, out of universe, you know, how We have, you know, deaf people and other people with different abilities. I feel like perhaps there would be a more interesting showing, especially from the Enterprise point of view of taking those first steps into space. Like, for instance, you know, in their transporter episode, you know, he had the gentleman in the wheelchair, the doctor or the professor in the wheelchair who invented the transporter. I guess due to a transporter accident, I suppose. But I feel like they could really tackle this better. And I don't really have an idea per se whether he could still be an ambassador or whether he's just some expert. Because, of course, Enterprise doesn't really visit Earth that often. But maybe he's, you know, on one of the first space, you know, outposts or something. Or something like that of where he has to maybe... deal with an alien race that they're encountering. Maybe he's just on the board for on board the Enterprise for some random reason, the NXO on, you know, a researcher or something, but then they deal with some alien race that they encounter that maybe he has some special ability to communicate with. It's just a rough concept. I just think that maybe Enterprise, being the latest one, might have a better way to do this than maybe 1988 did. You guys have any other concepts of how this could go?
That's a good idea. I mean, I would have never actually considered this one, honestly. It wouldn't have popped out to me as one that I would have thought of, but yeah, like, I agree with you that this
and,
kind
and
of...
I don't know if he would have the chorus, or she, that would have the chorus, or maybe if there's some sort of technological way that human would communicate or would, quote-unquote, listen. I don't know. So that'd be just something interesting to throw out there.
Yeah, it would be an interesting concept for sure.
Sure. And
yeah, the way I saw it was maybe this was an alien they encountered that communicated this way. Just because with the purpose of the Enterprise, it's the frontier ship. I mean, it's not going to star bases because there's nothing in front of it. But I see what you're saying. And I think if you played the line with an alien where you're still representing this and it's, yeah, like a culture... And it could be their entire... Maybe it's like a codependent species where they grew up on the same planet, kind of like the Zindi, but also in the fact that, you know, like one can't speak, but they can telepathically commute with these other, and they've formed this kind of symbiotic relationship.
All right, and I have the perfect title, Where Silence Has Lease. Huh?
Huh? I see what you did there.
Yeah, that's a great... Gosh, Phil, jumping...
I hope Darren doesn't get to go next.
I don't know. It could be depends how the episode goes. You could always go Dark Whisper if there's something really dark about the episode.
In a whisper darkly.
There we go. All right. Yeah. We'll work on it. So Daniel, what's your season 2 TNG pick for Enterprise? Or Star Trek Enterprise, depending upon which
season. It's gonna be really awkward when we get to season 5. And
so I actually picked The Outrageous Okana. And this actually came to me kind of right after, like, looking down the list of season 2.
I thought you were going to say out of the blue, and I thought that'd be a nice blue shirt joke.
No. So I'm thinking of the scene, the famous scene, of course, when Riker and Picard are on the bridge, and he's using lasers? Like, do we even have to put our shields up for this at this point? I mean, I guess we have to, but yeah, I love that scene, and it's great. But obviously, he was even, like, with his Han Solo-like ways, he was never really a threat for the Enterprise, but he would be a threat for the NX-01. Fancy flying and primitive technology is exactly kind of fits into the Enterprise mold. And then, of course, I think, I don't know, I feel like the other message of the episode, this entire, like, arranged marriage kind of thing that was going on as well, kind of probably would have more of an impact earlier in the timeline as well. It's an episode that doesn't really work that well in TNG, but I think could work very well if it was rewritten for Enterprise.
And I feel like it could be interesting, because, like, if he's like this like daring do pilot, you could have, like, I feel like this could be maybe like a good Travis episode, because Travis as a pilot would be like, oh man, that's sure. So cool, yeah. How you did mm-hmm. this and that. You know, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a boomer and I've been out in space too. And they can talk about space ventures. And you know,
the only problem is I don't know who he would hit on when he gets
Hoshi.
Well, no, but like in the transporter room, we don't have Enterprise doesn't have a transporter chief or anything like that. So, I don't know who it would be, but
Maybe Chef. No, I don't
know. Riker? What? No, he didn't even do that. No, I'm just kidding.
And what would be your outrageous title?
Oh, see, Enterprise doesn't really have a theme like the rest of the series. This is the hardest one.
They're usually like one or two words only. Like they're less sentences.
Is this going to be a three-parter?
And it'll be a three-parter. Discount Han Solo.
That works for me. it'll be the fourth season where they were just doing fanboy stuff. All right, so Karen, what's your pick for Enterprise?
Well, in their second season, I thought that they should do the episode Where Silence Has Lease. And because when I was approaching this thought experiment, I more looked at what episodes and experiences would I want to see these characters participate in. And I think that'd be really interesting. Again, we're in the frontier, you know, we're out there, there's no one here to help us, and the Enterprise NX-01 gets caught in Nagilum's, you know, nebula of, you know, terror, and he, which
that's
the title
the
now.
Worst Harry Potter
nebula
book ever.
Of nebula of terror is the the title, but I think it'd be really interesting to see them overcome that, because, you know, Archer doesn't really want to destroy the entire ship as his trump card. Who knows if you even have self-destruct systems like that?
I was going to say, yeah, we never saw self-destruct on Enterprise, did we?
I mean, I guess he could hold a phaser up to the warp core and be like, this will probably do it. But, you know, it's when polarizing the hull is part of your complement of defense mechanisms, there's not a lot you can do. So
maybe
I think,
if we reverse the polarity of the hull.
No, that's just crazy. They won't discover that for another 100 years. But so that's the episode I would put in Enterprise, where I think that would be interesting to see this crew come together to get out of this situation in the Nebula of Terror.
Now, what kind of beverage is in that nebula? I'm just curious.
Oh, it's definitely not coffee. It's like Red Bull.
There's catfish in that nebula.
Catfish in the nebula.
Oh, goodness. And I can see that being in the early season, you know, where Archer's still very optimistic about, like, hey, we're going to have aliens. And then, like, this guy's like, well, I'm an explorer, too. That will kill you.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is... Should have made a left at Albuquerque and not gone through here.
Maybe when... To Paul, when you said Nebula of Terror when you translated that, maybe not take us through it? Anyway.
Yeah. I thought Vulcans were being facetious. We are never facetious.
Okay, well, moving ahead 100 years. And then, you know, Darren, I'm not saying this has to be TOS. Maybe it's TAS. I don't know. But Daniel, what do you have for the 23rd century?
So this might be a cheat. But I'm going to go with it anyways. I picked The Child.
Ooh, get off the stage.
You know, that sounds like a TOS episode.
Which was supposed to be a Phase 2 episode, as we all know. And, you know, it's actually morbid curiosity. I wouldn't say morbid curiosity, but curiosity, I'll just say, I guess, more than anything else. Because, honestly, Child, not a great example of kind of the forward thinking of Star Trek. We don't need to get into why.
So who gets pregnant, Daniel?
Well, I think in the original script, wasn't it? I think it was Chapel, I believe.
Well, I would assume if it's Phase 2, it's probably Ilea.
Oh, maybe it was. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. It's been a little while since I've actually looked it up.
And she would be adamant that her oath of celibacy was still intact, and they're like...
And then Decker would be, who's the father?
Who's the father? I am curious to see how that would kind of play out.
I'm just now imagining V'ger just warping in, like, boom, like, right there. He, like, beams over. He's like, who's the fuck? No, just
that'd be cool. So, I, you know, just to see...
Is the creator?
Just to see who, you know, sometimes... For the most part, I do believe that, you know, TNG did kind of move the Star Trek vision forward. But sometimes we fell back, and it would be interesting to see like how TOS would have handled it, or even Phase 2 or whatever, compared to Star Trek, just to see the different phases of how phases of how those things would have worked. So I that's kind of why I picked it. I would like to see it in its natural habitat, I guess is what you'd say.
Now, one thing about is interesting if you place it in TOS, this isn't a hard and fast rule, but generally during that time, it was unusual to see someone pregnant on TV. Now, it wasn't unheard of because because it is Desilu. You know, Lucy was pregnant, and I Love Lucy. So it wasn't, you know, so maybe they would have been progressive in that way, but it's very unusual to see a pregnant woman in the 60s on TV. All right, so for my choice of TOS, since we're just using TOS for our scrap heap of terrible episodes, I picked Times Squared.
I'm really surprised you picked this because of how much you talked about it a couple weeks ago.
Right. Well, I was thinking about it because, of course, it's the one that jumps out immediately when I think season two, no matter how far I try to throw up. I was thinking, okay, Times Square, how do we make it interesting, you know, that more than one thing happens per frame? And my first thought was, well, okay, two captains, two Kirks. But I'm like, you know what? We've seen two Kirks. And when they split in half because of the transporter. Right. And we forget that we have shuttlecraft, whatever that episode is. and I was thinking, well, you know what we've never seen? Two Spocks. And no, and I mean, yes, two regular size Spocks.
Okay.
Wait, well, what about...
And I'm not counting JJ.
No, what about... The mirror episode.
Mirror. But they're not in the same...
Side by side.
Well, yeah. Okay, they're not next to each other. Okay, that's fine.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. Times Squared could be two Spocks. And maybe it's something generally...
Spock Squared.
Yeah, you could have sort of like... Because Spock has done that acting sometimes where he's like, struggling to be whatever, conscious and awake. And so maybe something similar to that, where you have Spock trying to figure out what future Spock has done. Now... My only issue is, I will say the one good thing I will say about Times Squared in TNG, they have very cool special effects with that anomaly. That is actually really
cool. That is true.
So TOS, I know, can't really do that.
They could probably. It's just a slit scan technique. They could probably do that.
But I don't know. Like, I think, I mean, they can do other things. Like, it doesn't have to be like a visual, because it could be like a prop. Like, I think Corba might maneuver. I mean, that's pretty cool. That ball of whatever Christmas ornament. So they can do something like that. That's pretty cool looking. That looks alien. But I could see that where the whole crew has to figure out what future Spock's about. Maybe get the whole in Spock, you know. And he can't mind meld. That would be my note. Because that would be a cheat.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, Philip. I just, this, like, now my mind is racing. This is actually really brilliant. Mm-hmm. This could be that B'Elanna episode where they split her Klingon and
human. Oh, there's
human
a
halves.
Human Spock and a Vulcan Spock?
That's what I'm thinking. How amazing would that be? That would be incredible.
It will be called Spock Squared. Or it could be Vulcan Squared. I'll go either way. But
yeah. What was that? Do you remember the name of that episode? I don't remember.
I don't. It could be also called Spock Square Root.
Ooh, I like that actually even better. Ooh. But yes, but it's not like called that. It's actually it's
the
just
symbol.
It's just the symbol. So it's the square of a Spock with just this. That would be awesome, actually. Cool. And by the way, Darren, you're gonna have to make that the title of this episode, the square of Spock, and actually include the
mathematical
square root symbol. Yeah.
Oh, make it an actual formula.
No, it has to be the formula with a picture of Spock in it.
Is there an emoji for Spock? Because there definitely
what
should
was it,
be.
The square root of Spock?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Darren, what is your, and this is going to be interesting, Star Trek The Original Series pick?
So there was an episode, I think it's the Cormorant Maneuver, where they come across this cube that's spinning. And I thought, yeah, well, we usually cubes are a little more imposing in later seasons. So I thought, because, you know, I don't know why, but what if we did Q-Who, the episode where we introduced the Borg in the original series? So Q and or Trelane or some, you know,
Tally-ho!
Godlike energy of the week, you know, I'm sure we could have it. Flings them really far. We'd go farther than 7,000 light years. We'd go like into the Delta Quadrant. And not because Kirk is smug, but because Kirk is, he has such confidence in his crew that they can handle anything. That's where, for the sake of it, Trelane, you know, is like, oh, really? You know, he buttons his jacket and, you know, he spins off into the Delta Quadrant, and then the Enterprise is not only massively dwarfed by this giant Borg ship, but again, remember, you know, when we watched Q-Who, these Borg are very different than, like, First Contact Borg, where they're very, you know, they move very slowly. It's much more of a mystery of, like, what is this? Why are they here? You know, how can... Now, of course, Kirk's going to try to talk them to death, and that'd probably be how they get away, where they, you know, input some sort of assimilation subroutine that makes them want to leave or go to sleep. But I would think it'd be really interesting to... I'd also like to envision what the Borg would look like in with 60s special effects and makeup. Because it would be interesting. I mean, let's just say it. The Andorians...
Well, you see, some of the Borg are white on this side.
Oh, okay.
And then they're cybernetic on that side.
So I thought, Q-Who, why not?
What would it be called? Trelane, who's that person?
No, we already made that Trelane joke. We can't do it again. We hide in Trelane.
Could you know, I was one of those people. Like, I was a big fan of 2009. And they were like, where are we going to go? What are we going to do next in the 2009 timeline? And I was always like, I want to see Kirk versus the Borg. I want to see it. And I know this is an unpopular opinion, but man, if we could have even put the Borg back in the original series. Oh, yeah. I'm all on board.
Didn't they have
that.
A Borg cube station near Jupiter? No, just kidding.
No one saw it coming. Okay. All right, so we're going to skip right over TNG, because it'd be pretty easy to pick season two episodes for TNG. And we're going to go into a close to the Gamma Quadrant in Deep Space Nine. So, Darren, you'll pick us up again with your Star Trek Deep Space Nine pick from TNG season two.
Okay, so I picked Peak Performance, which is towards the end of season two. Actually, some would consider it the end of season two. But this is the one where the Enterprise does its kind of war games against the Hathaway. And so I was thinking, what if they're trying to get the station ready for defending the Jem'Hadar, and they have the Defiant. So they do a mock battle where they split the crew in half, and half the crew has to be on the Defiant attacking the station, you know, mock attacking, and the other half is defending the station. But again, to supplement it, they have to have Rom and Leda and all the, you know, they're separating everybody. And I'm not saying the Ferengi are going to pop in, because that would be kind of weird with Quark there, but some Delta or Gamma Quadrant alien's going to take that moment to come out the wormhole and be like, you know, oh, station, I will save you. Or, oh, look, a station I can easily take. And basically just hilarity will ensue. And I thought that would be an interesting, again, seeing those characters in that kind of situation with the Defiant. Everything's on, you know, mock phaser, laser blasts. But I think we'd also get some really good shots of, you know, just flying around the station, flying around the Defiant.
Okay, I picked that because that is for the same reason. I was thinking like, okay, peak performance, war games. Well, Dominion, just like we had the Borg threat, the Dominion threat. Okay, so when you were talking, Darren, this is what I imagined. Like, is it like a pickup game? Sisko's like, I'll take Worf, and Kira's like, I'll take Dax, and like, so like now the big
so
thing
Rom's
about
the last, and he's like always the last.
But like, so the big thing about peak performance is it's Riker versus Picard. Now, who is the big head-on match? Is it necessarily Kira versus Sisko, or who do you think is the big like verse characters? Like, who would be in
command
of which one?
I think it would have to be. I want to say Kira versus Sisko, and Kira has to defend the station.
Well,
instead of attack.
Yeah, and she's good at defense, right? Theoretically.
True. I'm trying to think. Yeah, who else possibly? Unless it's like really fish out of water, like Odo, or someone who would just have no idea like what he's doing. In either situation.
Is it the Bajoran militia versus Starfleet?
Oh, and so we see
Kira
a lot more background
Odo,
characters?
And then you'd have...
Odo's the ref. He's the one who's going to decide.
You're out!
Yeah, I mean, it's canon established he's a good ref. So don't touch him. But that would be interesting, though, with the Bajoran militia. And so then you have, like... Vedic Barile and Kai Winn, of course, shows up to supervise the winning team. Anyway, but yeah, I think either Kira versus Sisko, or like you said, the Bajorans versus the Federation, although that probably wouldn't lend itself to good relations between.
Well, no, I can see it. Okay, what the makeup is that it's to protect Bajor against an invasion, and of course, Deep Space Nine is the front line
right.
or the wormhole. So you have the Defiant playing sort of the Jem'Hadar you know, attack force, because that's, you know, one defines the same as a Jem'Hadar fleet. We all know
exactly.
That.
Exactly. It's so overpowered, Philip. Right. You won't even know.
Come on, guys! Let's not even get into it.
And so you have the Bajoran leadership there on the station to oversee, you know, what would happen and what, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you have Kira in charge, and then Odo.
So it could kind of start where Sisko's talking to the Bajoran leadership, and he's like, hey, we've totally outfitted the station. We're good to go. And he's like, prove it. He's like, okay, let me go get in the Defiant and attack you.
And then I could see what, and this may be too complicated, a Gamma Quadrant species picks that exact time to be like, hey, the wormhole, let's make first contact. Wait a minute, you are warlike people. You know, like you're attacking each other.
And they don't believe him because, you know, they just saw it. Like, why are you attacking?
That kind of fits perfectly, too, because if you split it down Starfleet lines, you're kind of splitting the cast in half as well, right? So you have O'Brien, Dax, and Sisko on the Defiant, and you have Odo, Kira, Quark.
Let's say Bashir stays.
If you want, just to make it one less.
Yeah,
Worf and Bashir.
Let's keep Bashir on the station.
They also have Garak.
Yeah,
so there's enough people like that makes it really interesting. That's actually a really, really, really cool idea.
And Garak, Garak's like the Wesley, where he's kind of like bending the rules a little
bit. Oh, exactly. He's like, oh, I'm going to go help the Defiant quick.
Odo taps into the security, so he actually sees everything they're doing as they're preparing.
Well, I can see Odo kind of like taking this opportunity to kind of walk by Garak's shop and be like, you know, because you don't necessarily see them together that I can think of. But he's sort of like, well, Garak, maybe you can help us after all. He's going to be like,
Philip, don't forget about the episode where Garak tortures Odo. there's that one episode.
But payback for this episode.
It's a really cool concept. And in fact, you know, not to us, but I think in a lot of times writers do this, where they pit the main characters against each other. But Peak Performance does it so wonderfully because it's not, like, seriously against each other.
Right.
But then something comes in and mixes it up, of course. Right. But now, you feel like the rest of the shows would kind of have that kind of episode, but I can't think of it, like, where it starts out technically as an exercise or a game, and then...
There's the Maquis training simulation in Voyager.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Voyager does kind of do that, too. That's true, yeah.
Now, what would be the name of the episode?
Well, I want to know is there a subplot like the Data subplot where is one particular member trying to prove his worth at the same time?
Morn. Morn is Morn. Playing some sort of a drinking game and
what if it's like this? What if it's elements of Move Along Home where Quark is trying to prove that he's, like, the best gambler.
No, Quark would be running a gambling thing about who's going to win.
Oh, there we go.
So he would be cheating to determine who wins.
So he tries to get his brother Rom to, like, sabotage. Like, he makes Rom stow aboard the Defiant.
And the name of the episode is May the Odds Be in Your Favor.
Oh, there nice, we go. Nice. There we go.
I want to see this episode.
Yeah,
this is a missed opportunity.
All right, well, you know what we're going to write for our next time they ask for submissions for fanfic. Okay, so for my episode of Deep Space Nine, and again, I'm just going to pick out all the worst ones. Hopefully the other series can make it better. I picked The Royale. Okay, so the reason I thought Royale was a couple reasons. One, this is going to be in the Gamma Quadrant, obviously.
Of course.
Right. Two, I want Quark there for some reason, because it's going to be the same kind of setting.
Because you need to have Quark saying, we're going to be here forever, and he's
No, he's going to be like, gambling? I know how to do this, you know, or whatever.
Oh, so he's the Data, baby.
Yes.
He's a new pair of Latinum.
Because he gets really involved in the story, like, you know, the first two acts will be like,
it's a holonovel for him. He's like, this is great. I could live here forever. Free food, free gambling. I can, these primitive Earth games.
Right. You know, and when they find out they need to buy the thing, he's like, he talks like, all right, what's your price? And anyway, I'll admit, I am not a fan of 80% of Ferengi episodes on Deep Space Nine, but this can be a Ferengi episode. So it's, you know, may not have any of the idea. It could be like Quark on some, you know, the Negus sends him out to the Gamma Quadrant for some scouting mission. So it's him and, like, you know, some randoms. Or it could be like maybe one member of the main cast, like Dax or someone's taken along. But it's going to be primarily a Ferengi episode. So it's like, you know, Quark, some random person, I'll say Dax for the moment, then like maybe either a Rom or a Nog or some other one. And so they find this place that's in the Royale, very similar. And you know what? It doesn't necessarily have to be a human that was caught there. It could be either a Ferengi or a Bajoran. Probably a Bajoran, right? Because there's a wormhole right there. So it's something like that. And maybe there's some Bajoran story, similar setup. I don't know. But basically, that's where you have it. So it's a Ferengi episode. Because there are probably one or two or three Ferengi stories I did like on Deep Space Nine. So when it does work, it does work well. So that's my concept.
Well, I think it's the episode, the gem, like where we first meet the Jem'Hadar, where isn't Quark going along, like,
yes,
with
it's,
Rom,
it's
with Nog,
Sisko,
on a camping trip?
Jake, Nog, yeah. And Quark, yeah.
So same quartet, but now they're stuck in this, you know, the Royale hollow world.
Oh, that would be interesting. I
and
can
again,
see that, because Sisko and Quark would react very differently.
And that's where it's very early Quark, where he just doesn't like Sisko at all. He doesn't even want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's actually the only one who can win the money to end the program.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, we appreciate what Quark's skills can sometimes be, right?
Right.
Yeah, no, I like that. And this could be called the Royale with cheese. No, it's not. It's not.
Nice.
I don't know. We'll work on it. All right, Daniel, what is your choice for Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 2 of Star Trek The Next Generation?
So I'm going to go with the Icarus Factor.
Okay, who banged Kira's dad?
See, this is the thing, right? You can't pick Kira, because that was the obvious choice for me, too. But, if you substitute
Old
Dax,
Man Sisko?
No.
We already know who did that. It was a prophet.
If you substitute Dax as either the Pulaski character or the... Like, let's say that one of the previous Daxes has had a relation with somebody's parent on the station.
Curzon? Because I could buy that.
Well, it could be Curzon. Presumably it'd be Curzon because he was the most recent. But who, I mean, I feel like... Because
Wait,
this is a vi-
I'm trying to think who it could be. Because we've seen a lot of parents. Okay, we've seen Bashir's parents.
Couldn't be Bashir's parents, no. Yeah.
We've heard of Bashir, or excuse me, we've heard of O'Brien's parents. We've never seen them. We know his dad likes to chase nurses around a table.
No, I don't think it would be O'Brien, because that would be too weird for the...
Well,
yeah,
okay, so
no,
it's not Sisko.
It's not Sisko, because that would have come up earlier. It can't be Odo, obviously.
Wait, is it Worf's mom? Because that's going to be really weird.
No, it can't be. There's got to be a character. Let's think. Oh, hang on. Let's think about this.
We met Quark's mom.
You know who it's going to be?
Who?
It's got to be Martog's family.
Because
Curzon is intimately involved with the Klingons, right? So why
intimately?
So why not? Anyways, but let me at least lay out my reasoning here why I picked the Icarus Factor. It's a very character driven episode. Very character driven. I mean, the entire thing is, of course, the joke made famous by Andy from Women at Warp. Hi, Andy. How are you? Hashtag Dandy. Is the fact that obviously one of our characters has banged one of the other characters' parent, which is a pretty significant event.
So that's the A story. What's the B story, Daniel?
Well, in Icarus Factor, the B story is Worf's rite of ascension.
But you could just keep.
Which you could totally keep. Or you could move it to Alexander, or you could move it to someone else.
Whoa,
or you could just keep.
Daniel, have you been drinking or anything? Did you just mention an Alexander storyline? What have you
Alexander
done with the real Daniel?
Daniel, I need you to take this knife and cut your hand and prove to us that you are not a changeling.
Oh, he's going to give us that speech about humanity and civil liberties.
How many Daniels do you think there are on Trek FM, guys? You think there are only three or four of us? Oh, no.
He's been in the podcast forever.
No, but it does have a lot of elements of Deep Space Nine episodes. Now, as a person that's not a writer, I can't fill in those gaps, but I do feel like they would fit very well in Deep Space Nine. Again, I do think the main question is, who did Curzon have relations with? And I don't know, I can't even think of anybody.
This can't be the exact title, but the title of this episode would be like, who did Curzon sleep with? Like that, I'm watching that Deep Space Nine episode.
Because, you know, actually just recently here, as we're recording, we were talking about the From There to Here covered the episode Dax, which is to me a very frustrating episode and a mediocre episode. But one of the interesting ideas is what is the past Dax's, what impact does it have on the future Dax's lives? And so you could cover that in this episode. You could replace Dax with the Icarus Factoria, or whatever you wanted to, however you wanted to Latinize it. I don't know, whatever. But so you could have like, oh, Curzon had been with this person before, and how does it impact the crew? And that would be kind of an interesting thing. It's got to be someone important to Sisko, I feel like, because he was like, you never told me. You know, I don't know. But anyway, sorry, I've been rambling on, but that was my idea.
You know, because I was trying to think, like, could there be a similar thing if someone's being offered command? Like, is Sisko being offered command of a starship or something? Or could it be something
what
like that?
What would Sisko need with a starship?
What would a prophet need with a starship?
Okay. No, I like it. Okay, so we're going to go from the Gamma Quadrant to the Delta Quadrant, but don't worry, we'll be back. This is TNG. So for my pick, and again, I'm going from the bottom. Not that I hate this episode, but I know you guys don't like it. The Dauphin, and that's how you pronounce it. I'm thinking that this is going to be, and I know this is very cliche, but that's what we live on. It's going to be a Harry episode. He's going to fall in love. She's going to be a shape-shifting Ewok, and the hijinks ensue.
Yeah, so I could see that.
You know what? It could replace the Space Herpes episode. I don't remember the name of it. But make it better, because it's a shapeshifter now.
Yeah, that's an idea.
It's almost the same episode, because
it really is.
Romantically, you know, Harry and Wesley are really not that different.
Well, actually, I would say they are, because, and I will come in defense of our great leader Christopher Jones and say that Harry at least got to kiss Ashley Judd. So Wesley got to kiss Ashley Judd. I don't know, but you know, that's neither here nor there, I guess. Yeah.
No, that's From There to Here, Daniel. You're messing.
Oh, sorry.
Different podcast.
right. So that's my thing. You know, it'd be a season 2 or 3 episode of Voyager. You know, wouldn't it be a great one, but it'd be hilarious, and we could add it to our what's wrong, you know, Harry's like Geordi. That's basically going to be. All right. So Darren, what is your Voyager entry?
Oh, wait, I'm actually excited about this one as well. So I wanted to do Elementary Dear Data, which is already a great episode, you know, but I was trying to think the main core of the episode that stays is them creating a self-aware hologram. Now, I mean, we already have the Doctor.
On Voyager? I don't buy it.
I know. So we already have the Doctor. So, but here's my thought. Okay, what if, because I was trying to think, okay, well, Geordi and Data are the ones who use the holodeck on the Enterprise. Who uses the holodeck, really? it's Captain Proton with
Buster.
And Buster Kincaid. So here's my thought. What if the way, so it's got to be Harry that asks the question, or some, you know, let's not dump on Harry. We'll dump on Tom. Tom asks the question, but basically,
Harry, I'm tired of beating these people. They're so easy. I'm getting tired of this program.
So at first I was thinking like Chaotica or something came self-aware, but then I had a better thought.
Satan's robot.
Danger.
I didn't want to dismantle Chaotica because he's such a great character. Like, to him all of a sudden to be like serious, like he's trying to figure out his own existence.
Death I shall conquer.
But what if the program creates a Captain Proton, and it's a different actor, and they're dressed like Captain Proton, just like Tom, and Tom's like, there's not supposed to be a Captain Proton, you're supposed to be the character playing the program, and the program creates a Captain Proton character that
I got it. He's tired of the program. Tom leaves, and he's like, look, Harry, just because I'm tired of it, I got it, you know, because I'm married in B'Elanna, I don't get to have fun anymore. Am I right, guys? Y'all left me hanging. But don't worry, Harry. You know, the computer can make a Captain Proton. You can still have fun. Computer,
there we go.
Create, blah, 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 and then, like, it's done. They walk away, and then you sort of have, like, for some reason the program's still running. You just hear
right.
Shing, the character appears, and then
he opens
fades.
Out of the he opens the porthole and steps into the ship, and he's like, you know, the music's all ominous, and but he's like way over the top because he's, you know, the counter to Kiotica, so he's very Flash Gordon, like yelling his lines, and he's just all over that.
Is it going to be played by Tom Paris? Is it going to be played by Robert McNeil as well? Or are we going to have somebody
would,
like...
I would say a completely different actor.
I would actually like that idea, Daniel. I think it's like a heavier makeup job because the computer's going to go off Tom. And so that would be interesting because we don't get to see Nick McNeil doing, you know, a lot of characters other than when he loses his tongue.
Yeah.
So he... Okay. I can go with that. So it's played by Robert Duncan McNeil. And... So in order to be a adequate, you know, companion on this adventure with Harry, he has to be semi-self-aware. And so he starts to, so yeah, he starts off bubbly and, you know, comically like the cereal, but then he starts to, and he has to have a moment where he, you know, looks in the periscope and he's actually seeing like stars. He's tapped into Voyager sensors and he sees the ship that's docked there. And, you know, we get, yeah, that that portion of the story is kind of the same where he's starting to gain control over the Voyager and he wants to fly the real ship. He wants to really explore space.
Well, he wants to save the day.
Oh, yeah. But all of his decisions are terrible because he's used to going up against Kiotica.
And I was just going to say, I mean, ooh, and like...
Go ahead, Daniel. I'm
sorry, I'm getting like 1,000 ideas.
I know.
We should, by the way... And I hope our listeners agree, and they're listening, and they're also enjoying this. We should get on with To the Journey, and we should just make this a great episode.
I have the title, Captain Proton's Revenge.
Ooh,
that's a good one. That's a good one. But I think, yeah. So, oh my goodness, I'm already losing some of my ideas. But yeah, you know, and so somehow, of course, Janeway gets dragged into this, right, as the bride of Kiotica, and she
who's
kind of
villain.
Has to, right, through Kiotica, and so she has to kind of placate these people in the same kind of vein, you know, that in, oh God, what's the second Moriarty episode?
Ship in the Bottle.
Ship in a bottle, where we kind of had to trick that you know, trick Moriarty into this whole thing. We had to do the same kind of thing on Voyager. It'd be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking like that. Voyager is encountering, you know, whether it's a, it could go one of two ways. Either one, it's like a regular first contact and there's a trade negotiation, or it is actually they meet some violent aliens and they're trying. Either way, Captain Proton is communicating with them. He's like, I'm Captain Proton, and away
with
your fiendish
plans. That'd be funny if he gains control of the helm, and all of a sudden the ship is like flying around, like swirling
doing barrel rolls. Do a barrel roll.
So you see the Voyager, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
But yeah, quick. All of the controls in his spaceship are controlling the Voyager. And
ooh, that would be fun. Yeah.
Maybe at the end, like somehow, and I don't know how it ends. Maybe but like he has to end up like giving commands, but he gives it in like Captain Proton speak to like the bridge crew. He's like,
now
fire
here,
the laser cannon, and Tuvok's like, yes, the laser cannon.
Yeah. Activate your electrified magna shield. You know,
Harry's, and then like, you know, Seven's like, what? And Harry's like, the shields.
What if instead of Janeway having to reprise Kiotica, Bride of Kiotica, what if instead B'Elanna has to be the femme fatale that he rescues?
Like
she hates
like,
it. She doesn't
want to
be
secretary, but something else, yeah.
Right.
Because you have to end the program somehow.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know. But what do you think, Dan? Yeah.
Or he imprints that on her. He sees her as that.
Well, I was just, well, that makes sense too, but I was just thinking that one of the best parts of the Bride of Kiotica is Janeway being dragged into the scenario.
True.
But what if, I mean, and this goes along with everything we're saying right here, what if every character gets dragged along because they all mean something to Tom, so everybody has to act in character in order to kind of facilitate this illusion that this
fake
Captain...
So I'm picturing that scene from DS9 where they're all walking to the holosuite to help Vic.
Exactly,
Fontaine.
Same kind of thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I think it would have to be real, like, everyone who's done it before can't do it again, so, like, Janeway can't do it, the Doctor can't do it, because they've done it already. So it'd have to be like, yeah, but
or
why?
The Doctor can come in as the president of Earth again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, yeah, if you wanted to, because, you know, it's always good to noon. But I can definitely picture B'Elanna being the most reluctant, but having to have the biggest role.
Right, yeah.
And Tom's going to be kind of, like, conflicted, because he's like, you have to convince me, like, you're not going to kiss him, right? You know, like, you know, there has to be some sort of... She's like, I don't know, Tom, isn't he you? You know, like,
I'm thinking of that other earlier episode where they're playing pool, and it's like, Tom, did you program him? He's a pig.
You're a pig.
And so is you. But, yeah, anyway, I think, yeah, it'd be a really fun episode, because it's always fun playing in the Captain Proton world. So Captain Proton's revenge.
Yeah, that I mean, I hope I don't have to go next. I hope I don't have to go next, because I don't think I can follow that up.
Daniel? Daniel? What is your pick?
I was just about to turn off this podcast, and I can't now.
What's your pick for Star Trek Voyager?
I picked Pen Pals, an episode that we love to talk about. Although I don't think it's a fantastic episode, it is a good episode, and it's got a lot to say. But Pen Pals, I think, would actually work better on Voyager. Presumably, on the flagship of the Federation. These conversations about what the Prime Directive is and what it means have already been had. Going into that situation, everybody knows what they're going to do. But here in the Delta Quadrant, when you have differing opinions, when you have these kind of conflicting, oh, what do we do? We're coming across this planet. And it kind of makes sense to me that if somebody reaches out to some member of the crew, it would be kind of more impactful.
Do you have a person in mind? Because I 100% do.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Please do.
Naomi. It literally will be Pen Pal. Naomi makes contact with an alien species unknown to the crew, because she's like, you know, doesn't have any kids to play with. And she ends up like, she's playing with the channel or whatever. Not playing, because she doesn't really play, but because she's a nerd. But like,
no, she's in Stellar Cartography. Yeah, or not Stellar Cartography, the Astrometrics.
And Seven's not there, or whatever.
Seven gets called away for whatever emergency, right? Yeah. The Decaf Nebula is right off the port bow. Yeah.
And then she makes contact with a child, and who's...
Is it the child?
Yeah, but it has to be someone who would not meet the Prime Directive, so it'd have to be like, maybe she's experimenting with like low-wave, whatever, blah, technobabble.
For Captain's paper as Captain's assistant.
Exactly. And so Naomi is the one who breaks the Prime Directive.
Oh, ooh. That's really interesting. Especially because...
And she's going to be the voice of, like, when you have Naomi, who's not a... I mean, she's a child, but, you know, she's precocious. But, like, she's going to be the one making the case to the Captain, we have to save these people. Yeah. And the Captain has to look Naomi in the face and be like, the Prime Directive, I'm sorry. You know, and then it goes from there.
Naomi? Naomi? Are you there? Yeah. No, that's actually
There's
really
lava
brilliant.
Everywhere. I don't want to die.
That's actually a really good idea because, you know, as much as, you know, we love Data here on Earl Grey, but he doesn't have the same kind of emotional impact that, like, an 11-year-old child will have.
He's like, Data,
on you.
Gosh, why'd you do that?
You know, and that's a really cool idea, and how Janeway would react to that would be a really interesting episode, because, you know, we do get Prime Directive episodes in Voyager, of course, but you could set this in season one easy.
Well, set this Naomi in season... doesn't exist then, so it'd be kind of hard.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. I guess we couldn't. I'm sorry, you're right.
If she's a baby.
Darn,
I mean, she
right.
is a fetus for about 3 seasons, but...
Yeah, you're right. But anyways, the point is you can kind of establish how, or maybe reestablish. Maybe this is more towards the middle of Voyager
now,
when they kind of...
Now, is this going to be, what would it be for Naomi? Would it be 15 days where, like, she's ripped off her captain's assistant rank at the beginning? You're sentenced to your quarters for 15 days with no dessert. All right, guys. Well, I think we did some, you know... Folks, we've that's can be all your submissions next year for new voyages and new worlds. Come on now, we've basically given everyone free outlines here, okay? But doing a Trek mix of season two for all the other Star Trek series is not the only thing we've been talking about this week on Trek FM. Here's a quick look at what else you may have missed this week on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
50 years, there's been something to carry it this far. In that vein of, hey, it's our generation or our era's mythic heroes that we can look up to. Do we dare put that in something that's lasted as long as, you know, literary-wise, Shakespeare and some of the other myths of you know, the ancients that have found a purpose and a use that still speak to people?
Women at Warp.
Admiral Alan Alda came to visit Captain Coretta Scott King. Meanwhile, morale officer Beyonce is trying to deal with her new Weasley sweater. And
they're all partying at the First Contact party.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
I'm going to take a moment just to say Stage 9 here on the Trek FM network is the only show I'm aware of where you're going to hear somebody get this upset about camera technology.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can listen to every show on the network at Trek.fm with links for iTunes, streaming services, and a direct download link. This week of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com. This is a great way for you to read all of the books you want to read but never have time for. Audible is always expanding with over 150,000 titles to choose from. There are classics, current bestsellers, and famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation. Audible has something for everyone. Now, as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to try out Audible yourself. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read. To support Trek FM, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. Thank you, Audible, for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. If you are a weekly listener and would like to directly help Earl Grey, please consider becoming a patron of Trek FM. At patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose a pledge level and receive rewards for becoming a Trek FM patron. You'll be inside the observation lounge of our network, able to participate in our monthly patron roundtable podcasts and supporting the production of all of our great content. We would like to take this moment to thank our current patron associate producers, Stephen Boyd and Ron Sarna. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey. Connect with other Trek FM listeners on our Facebook discussion group called The Babel Conference, found through the Facebook search field, or like the facebook.com/trekfm page for show updates and announcements. The network is also on Twitter, at Trek FM.
All right, Darren, when you're not creating sentient life forms in the holodeck, holosuite, holo whatever, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi.
And Daniel, when you're not being outrageous, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter as well, at oneofdan. That is the number one, not the word.
All right. And if people want to talk to me about why two Spocks would be awesome, they can contact me on Twitter at NC Public Servant. That's NC for North Carolina. Well, guys, whew, man, I have so many stories to go through right now to either write or to act out as voice plays for future Literary Treks episodes. This is going to be a whole lot to work on here. But until next time, when we somehow go through season 3 and apparently make it even better, judging from what we did to season 2, we will see you all next week on Earl Grey. Until then, make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Engage.
Fire.